It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to What Culture Gaming. I'm Scott, joined by Josh.
Hello, Scott.
Josh, my friend, a big old debate, a big old conversation seems to be exploding around the games industry, which kind of traces back to an investor call from yesterday coming from Ubisoft, where Chief Financial Officer Frederic Duguay says that 3 to 4 premium games a year for Ubisoft is no longer a proper indication of their value creation dynamics, and saying that going forward, they'll be building high-end free-to-play games that trend towards AAA ambitions over the long term. Don't know why they couldn't just, you know, do the AAA ambitions now and keep doing them right now. Saying that we've taken the time to learn from what we did last year with Hyperscape, forgot it existed. Mm-hmm. We are also learning from what we'll be doing with Roller Champions. We've been making a lot of progress, or we've been learning a lot with Brawlhalla that's rapidly growing, and we think that now is the time to come with high quality free to play games across all our biggest franchises across all platforms. Now this is blown up online. There's a bunch of people who have weighed in on this, including Corey Barlog, God of War 2018 creative director. But what's your initial thoughts on this before I get to what everyone else is saying?
I think we live in a simulation and a cycle, Scott, because we go through the same, like, you know, eras of gaming, I feel, every 5 or 10 years. I remember back in 2010, maybe a bit later, when the industry was saying, no, free-to-play is the future. Everything is going to be free-to-play. We're definitely going to do it. And then they tried, and it didn't really work. And then they were like, okay, we'll go back to making actual AAA games. And now I feel like we're
actual
in that position
video
again
games.
Where the free-to-play boom has kind of come back around thanks to the likes of Fortnite, thanks to the likes of Warzone, which just made money hand over fist. Mm. And now we've got Ubisoft and EA yet again going, you know what, that actually is the future. We were right the first time. Let's just do that forever, which sucks when that's the only thing you're getting given, I think.
Do you think that we'll get another tweet or another sort of comment from EA just saying, like, oh, we were right all along, no one wants single-player games? So this is where it all kind of blew up, because you had the initial financial thing, like I said, the investor call on the Ubisoft side, and then Jeff Keighley tweeted, including some stats from the EA side, where he's quoting an analytical report from Nico Partners' Daniel Ahmed, who put something together in regards to EA's revenue, where EA have said that only 26% of their overall revenue has come from premium price points, where the remainder 76% is all microtransactions, DLC, monetization models, Apex Legends, FIFA Ultimate Team, all that jazz. That just seems to be making an insane amount of money. Ahmed did point out that that split in revenue was 50% before 2020, so you can kind of factor that in as a variable in how much, you know, spending methods and different playing mentalities changed across 2020 just because of the reality of what we were all going through. That is worth factoring in. Like I said, Jeff Keighley put these two together, just saying, you know, Ubisoft's whole push towards high-end premium stuff, free-to-play stuff, and EA's revenue split, which is the thing that's kind of blown everything up. So you had a lot of people replying in his tweet, including Ubisoft's own senior analyst Sean Lama, who said that some of the interpretations from the article, the initial write-up on Video Games Chronicle about the Ubisoft stuff, is incorrect. He was saying he just wants to steer the conversation away from free-to-play games or replacing AAA paid games, and instead think about free-to-play games are going to be an additional way to experience some of the IPs, pointing to Call of Duty Warzone as one of those models. Also to throw in, though, is Corey Barlog from God of War, who says that this overall push makes sense from a business standpoint. It makes sense from a make as much money as you can with less financial risk standpoint, but the problem that he has is that often these two things are trumping what video games could be, making the future of the industry so uncertain to him. So yeah, I mostly think that too. I think that we'll end up chasing this line of just how much can we get away with, what's the minimum amount of actual quality in the product, before you find those mechanics that can be, you know, loot boxed out or microtransactioned out. And I don't think that, I think it'll lead to a less satisfying feel as you, if you even hit credits. Do credits even exist anymore, Josh Brown? I don't even know what we're doing.
That's the big worry, isn't it? Because, I mean, you could already kind of argue that a lot of free-to-play elements have already made their way over into these AAA premium games anyway, you know? Mm. You look at the shift towards the likes of The Division or Destiny, which are very MMO, very, in the case of Destiny now, free-to-play based. They're based around that model, but they charge up front. And we've even seen that trickle into some previously single-player-driven, story-centered titles like Assassin's Creed. You know, that game has a second currency. It has daily and weekly challenges, missions like that, things you can buy in store, a store that constantly updates in the same way that something like, you know, Fortnite does or whatever, constantly has stuff added to it. So, like, these elements have always been there. So to see a proper shift to just free-to-play games in general of a high quality, it's not too much of a jump. That said, I do agree with what Barlog is saying, that if this is what everyone's doing, if this is what all the big publishers are focused on, it will make the industry far narrower than it is right now and will limit the amount of choice that players have when it comes to what games they're getting and what games are being greenlit, what games are being made, all of that good stuff. And I like free-to-play games, you know? I like Call of Duty Warzone. I even liked having a little bash of Fortnite back when that came out.
But rare I don't is want the day everything. I'm not on Pokemon Go, mate. Rare is that day.
Pokemon Go is never coming back for me, but I enjoyed it when it came out, you know? I can at least appreciate that. But, like I said, I like free-to-play games, but I don't think everything should be free-to-play. I don't think Assassin's Creed should pivot to be free-to-play, to be a free-to-play franchise. I don't think, you know, anything else Ubisoft has, Watch Dogs, should become free-to-play or anything like that. But it seems like, you know, even if certain AAA releases don't go away for Ubisoft, it does seem like we're going to get an Assassin's Creed game that is free-to-play, whether or not it's a mainline series or not, or a Watch Dogs game that is free-to-play, whether that's Watch Dogs 4 or not, you know? It's just, I don't know. I don't know if I want to see these franchises go in that direction is the thing I'm kind of trying to get at.
Well, the thing, it makes me curious how you monetize it and maintain a through-line story. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Mm. The completion data for AC Valhalla is, like, terrible. Like, hardly any... Like, we've talked about this before, but a million more people will be talking about the way that that game ends if they'd seen it, because that game ends on a big old talking point that should be up there. It should be one of the big cultural talking points in gaming, the same way that Assassin's Creed 2's ending was. And it's kind of indicative of just how big and bloated and stretched out a lot of the newer Assassin's Creed games are, or a lot of the newer Ubisoft games are, that people aren't finishing them. And it's that whole thing of, you know, how do you make sure that someone's getting value for their money? Is it just in sheer time invested in a game? Is it in story points? Is it in mechanics evolving over time, progression loops? Like, I think all that stuff is kind of just going to be blown wide open if we're changing the very idea of an entry point, because on the other side of the spectrum is PlayStation just saying, well, we're going to actually up the entry fee so that our base price point is £70, $70, and that frees up all the microtransaction side of it because we've already made our money back, assumedly based on pure unit cost, so they don't need to have those separate models. But even they have tried with Destruction All-Stars. That game has a rancid approach to monetization where they gave it away on PS Plus, but you get like three modes and then you pay for the story content. It's like, if you want to, you get one character for free and then it's like three or four other characters, but you have to pay. It's premium currency to actually just get anything out of that game. And I'm just kind of like, I guess everybody's going to be trying their own approach to it.
Totally. And I mean, you can look at the likes of Sony, which, you know, to their credit, have for the most part embraced this single player experience over the past generation. But even they're not doing it just because single player sells really well and it makes them a lot of money. Like, the fact that people love those games and they're filling what's becoming, sadly, a niche in the market means they also get to sell consoles, means that they also get to sell services like PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Now, all of that extra stuff that they can bundle in. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see why they have that extra incentive, because, you know, on the other hand, in Ubisoft, it doesn't have consoles to sell. It doesn't really have services to sell that they can, like, link them in. So it makes sense that they're focusing on DLC, microtransactions, free-to-play elements, and the like. And we're going to get to this position, I worry, where we're just kind of in this future where everything is vying for your time. Everything is this 100-hour plus experience, this 100-hour plus daily grind where you're encouraged to jump on every single day.
Do your dailies.
Do your dailies, do your weeklies, do all of that stuff. But we can only juggle so many of those at a time. You know, we can only juggle juggle so many Destinies, we can only juggle so many Assassin's Creeds, we can only juggle so many The Divisions before the whole industry kind of just becomes bloated and it becomes apparent that they're trying to like nickel and dime us. I hope it doesn't get to that position, and I hope these are of a high quality, and I hope they do deliver interesting experiences. But, you know, we've been commenting on this for a good while now, and I just feel like we've been burnt so many times where we've had publishers saying, don't worry, it's still going to be a really enjoyable experience. You're still going to get a lot of good content in there, and then it comes out and it's broken and you're doing the same five missions over and over again, and you're like, why is money being spent on this?
I hope this doesn't turn into the new, you know, the squad-based game can be played in single player. It's a totally valid single player experience. Yeah. And then you get there, you go down and you never get picked up by invisible teammates and the whole thing. It doesn't work as a single player experience for the most part. I hope it doesn't turn into that where you have different publishers just saying like, oh, it's totally a premium single player experience for free. Oh my God, dive in. And then you get to a certain point in the story where maybe you have to pay to get a certain weapon to beat a certain boss. Or there's you know, something. I can just see them going down that route and hitting some sort of weird roadblock that doesn't get put in until after the review period or after the initial access period, and then you just get to Konami the whole thing and go like, hey, by the way, if you want to actually finish this, you're gonna have to cough up some cash. I think it'll get worse before it gets better, even though I do see light at the end of the tunnel in regards to Warframe, Pokemon Go, Warzone, like, you know, as well. Like, there are those games that monetize their free-to-play aspect well and they respect the consumer, and they're obviously the biggest successes in the industry. It is funny, the dude mentioning, Ubisoft guy mentioning Rocket Arena, Hyperscape, that just barely made a splash at all. That was just the most soulless thing. And mentioning Brawlhalla is something that's picking up. Like, Brawlhalla is really solid mechanically. It's like a free-to-play Smash Brothers, but they then charge you for each individual known character. And I went on to play the Kung Fu Panda skins. But the price point's insane, Josh Brown. And I was like, I can't. I can just justify a lot of Kung Fu Panda stuff. But
you know what? First of all, I've never met a man who loves Kung Fu Panda as much as you do, Scott Tilford.
Best trilogy in the world, mate.
Still haven't watched it. I will do, just for you one day. As a birthday present or something. Secondly, I can't remember the point because I was going on about Kung Fu Panda for too long. It has completely gone out of my head.
Brawlhalla,
I was going to say something along the lines of, there can only be, you know, when you look at a Warzone, when you look at a Destiny or something, we always have in this industry publishers trying to chase trends and trying to mimic other things that are successful without realizing that those things are successful for a reason and they dominate the market share, you know what I mean? They replace whatever's at the top, and it's really difficult to take them away, you know? So we had a bunch of modern military shooters vying for Call of Duty's title in the late 2000s. Then we had a bunch of Destiny clones vying for Destiny's title recently.
Hero
the thing
shooters.
About them is that they produce more failures than they do successes. It's hard to make a game like Call of Duty Warzone that is not only good, but captures the zeitgeist on such a massive level. Yet if that's all we're getting, if all we're getting is chases for these crowns, we're going to see a bunch of games like Hyperscape that you just forget exist. I forgot. Yeah. I said to you, Scott, what's Hyperscape? Because I just forgot it came out. I forgot I even saw a trailer or knew what it was. And I worry that shifting to a free-to-play model, chasing for this kind of mythical game that can continue to produce content and continue to sell microtransactions will result in far more disasters than it does hits.
These kind of ideas are not greenlit by people who play games, because you're never going to be memorable in someone else's shadow, like, not in full. Like, you need to put something better forward, and I feel like it is that whole thing where I can just imagine this archetypal shadowy business person just going like, well, they'll play it forever, it's enjoyable, it's got all these mechanics. And I don't mean to pin it on Mr. Jim Ryan at all, but he's the person I sort of think of him too, where someone asks him what his favourite game is and he just tells you what they've got coming up in the next year. And it's just like, no, you need to be more like Shuhei Yoshida or Shigeru Miyamoto or people who actually play games and put those things out, in different design philosophies and, you know, financial realities of greenlighting the right project, rather than putting all their money or all their eggs in one basket and just saying, well, you can play this for 200 hours and we'll monetize those 200 hours. Like, the thing that Barlog said, you know, it does make sense, make as much money as possible in the shortest time period, and you're thinking of the financial realities of, you know, just creating a set of mechanics that you can just repeat for hundreds of hours. But ultimately, that sucks to people who play games regularly, and it's just not going to, you know, it's going to require something special to twin those two mentalities together.
You know, not to just drag this discussion out until we... Because we could talk about this all day, you know, pretty much.
We could sit down
over a pint and talk about this for like 10 hours. But I just want to make one kind of final thing on my end, like exactly following on from what you said there. I think that's what we've got with The Avengers, which we bring up all of the time. But we
had that
news story earlier on in the year from Square Enix saying, like, look, we want to increase the grind so people continue to engage. We don't want to make interesting mechanics. We don't want to make an interesting story. We don't want to give people actual reasons, creative reasons to come back. We're going to just do it in the most manipulative, artificial way possible. And in many cases, that's just increasing the grind, making leveling up harder so you have to play more of it.
Oh, dude,
you basically do not get the reward unless you're putting more time into it. And I think that's
it's entirely a return to like the arcade mentality of just sort of like pay to play, like every set of gameplay loops. Like if you were a cold-hearted, non-game playing business person, you would look at the amount of stuff that we've quote unquote gotten away with across the last 20 years in terms of story focused games, thematically focused games, narratively driven games, and then gone to that and looked at it and gone, why haven't you monetized every part of this? We used to monetize it back in the arcades. We used to monetize it. Oh, you're going to shoot this gun and pay money for it. And I get that approach on a cold-hearted business level. But I think it sucks for a creative medium. And I think that obviously it requires a balance. And right now, you know, obviously there's going to be people taking and running with these comments in terms of, I mean, we debated going down the route of like, oh my God, they're committing to this stuff, which they kind of are. In regards to specific franchises, but I think it's going to be very telling where we go from here, especially at the dawn of a new generation, just how carried away we get in regards to plugging millions of fans into an experience on the fastest systems ever and monetizing all that stuff. Like, I get that they see the dollar signs in the middle of that, but I think that it could get very horrible very quickly. So yes, let us know what you think down in the comments below. The likes of Ubisoft and EA is potentially chasing these models in full, and if there's any silver, you know, green, silver lining, whatever the word is, something good.
Just
some silver in there that could come out of it. For now, though, I've been Scott from WhatCulture.com.
I've been Josh from WhatCulture.com.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.